This is War Room Moments, the show that takes you around the world to share interviews with some of the most successful and most relevant people on the planet, hear their stories, and get the most important business lessons they have learned on their road to success, and get exclusive advice on how to implement their success into your life and business. War Room Moments is brought to you by the Strategic Advisor Board. Here's your host, Jason Miller.
All right. Hey, welcome to the War Room today. I got a real awesome guest today. A lot of power behind, you know, his past as a chief executive officer. And I can't wait to hear some of the inside stories of things and so on and so forth. And I know you've transitioned on to something else now, but, you know, it's great to have you on the show, Rocky. And, you know, thanks for being here.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. I look forward to speaking with you and your audience.
Yeah, awesome. Well, hey, I always say I suck at introducing people. So can you just give us a quick 30-second introduction of who you are and what your superpower is?
All right, here we go. started unloading trailers part-time at UPS in 1976, June 15th, as a matter of fact. And UPS had a promotion from within policy, which I took advantage of and rose to the level of president inside of UPS. Did a lot of interesting things. Maybe we get a chance to talk about them as time goes on. I did the traditional things at UPS, but I also did the non-traditionals. We purchased mailboxes, et cetera. I had the opportunity to run that and then rebrand that to what's today the UPS store. And then we bought over 20 companies and built what's today UPS Supply Chain Solutions. I ran this side of the world for UPS and that venture. And then actually had the opportunity during a meeting with a customer to come up with the tagline that's today UPS's healthcare tagline. These are not packages, these are patients. Retired after 36 years with UPS, and then took a job as CEO of a telecom company. We built cell towers, upgraded cell towers. We sold that company and then started my own business, 360 Management Services. So I guess my biggest failure is retirement. And you know, my wife says, you're not following me around the food store, so go find something else to do. So that's what I've been doing, finding stuff to do to get out of her way.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, that's a very, you know, you know, people throw that terminology around a lot of, you know, being the CEO of this. We were talking about this before we hit record. And, you know, it's interesting to, I'm not going to say the word real, you know, CEO or president or any of that, but there's a different perspective when you're looking at organizations like you were running versus like your typical mom and pop type thing. I've got my neighbor ran Oracle for Larry Ellison for 20 some years. So I get that perspective from him all the time, and he always likes to remind me that I'm entitled to my wrong opinion. He's 82 and doesn't really care. Right. So it'd be interesting, just before we kick the show off, your perspective behind running big organizations like that, you know, and then kind of now running your own thing. Can you give a little perspective? I think there's a little nugget there to grab out of that.
Well, I got to tell you, the aha moment I had when it comes to that question and that answer is, so I'm at UPS running very large operations for them. And then we purchased the MBE at the time, now the UPS store. All entrepreneurs, 100% franchisee owned. And I got to tell you, the respect I gained for those individuals is unbelievable. Because what you realize is when you're in a large company like UPS or Oracle or pick one, right, you have a P&L, but your P&L is sort of kind of bumpered or funded by this large organization behind it. So you might have missed your P&L, but somebody else is making it. But not an entrepreneur, what I learned from these franchisees, these small business owners, they're all in. They take everything they have in life, slide it across the table and say, this is my life savings, I'm in. And what really struck me is at the end of the day in a small business, they hit the cash register, the draw opens, They pay their people, they pay their vendors, and what's left is what they take home to their family. That's really the definition of all in. That's a small business owner. And from that moment forward, I had nothing but the greatest respect. In fact, I would often say, I don't know if I could do that, right? Spending all this time inside a large organization. Look, you have your ups and downs inside of large organizations, and there's goods and bads in all things. But that to me was that moment where I said, wow, that's all in. And we don't really do that. Now, later on inside of UPS, during my time there, I had full P&L responsibilities. For example, as the person responsible for the UPS store, we had to carve out that because of franchise rules. So I had a pure P&L. But boy, I'll tell you what, to answer your question, that's the definition of all in is a small business owner. And I got to tell you, I have nothing but the greatest respect and admiration for them.
Yeah, man, no kidding. For sure. That's, you know, I work with a lot of small business owners and, you know, watching that struggle just to pay payroll is that's a real thing. That's a real struggle.
Think about how they have to navigate. I mean, we all just went through a difficult time of COVID. We've all had our ups and downs, as you know, but if you think about that, they have a many more times, right? Because it doesn't take a lot. I mean, if you have three employees and one of them's not doing well, it's a third of your workforce.
Yeah, right.
Right. If you have 10,000 people working for you, you got a lot of people to get to a third to have to be bad.
Yeah, right. No kidding, man. Yeah. I mean, gosh, if we just shut the show down right here, it'd be great.
So, wait, does that mean you're not anticipating me to do much better?
No, just kidding.
I mean, I can understand why, but
there's a lot of my point is there's a lot of lessons just before we even started the show here, but anyway, so just kind of I'm curious, did you come from a family of entrepreneurs?
Oh no, my dad came from Italy, and you know, what he instilled in us is, hey, you got to put food on the table. So whatever you need to do to take care of your family, you have to do that. And so, you know, it's funny, when I started at UPS, he told me two things that stuck with me. He said to me, hey, look, whatever they ask you to do, say yes and thank you. And then learn your job and learn some more. The minute you think you've got it, or the minute you think you know everything, someone just passed you right by. And so that stuck with me. And so as they tapped me on the shoulder and said, hey, we got a new job for you, I would think to myself, are you sure I'm the right guy person for this? You don't have a smarter person than me to do this? Come on. And all I could hear my dad saying is, hey, whatever they ask you to do, say yes and thank you. And then learn your job and learn some more. And so that was what was instilled in us growing up, that, you know, put your head down, chop wood, and just do the best job you can.
Yeah, for sure. It's funny because I grew up on a farm my whole life, and then I spent 23 years in the military after that, and, you know, ran businesses and things along the way and so on and so forth. And I remember my dad, you know, everything he ever did on the farm, everything was very personal, right? So when the seed guy came, right, it was, the seed guy didn't come in the middle of the day. The seed guy came to dinner, right?
Right.
And had dinner with the family. The insurance guy, when insurance had to be renewed for the year, he came to dinner. And it was just this, it's like we've lost some of that old school way of doing things. And I mean, some of it was forced by some of the things that happened in the last three, 4 years, but there again, that's not an excuse to continue it that way either, right?
No, I mean, they never taught your dad or my dad. No one ever said to them, hey, you're gonna need to work on your interpersonal skills.
Right.
You know, I mean, right. It was always a first name basis. It was always, you know, that relationship that they built with each other. Because you know what they had? They had an innate sense of integrity, right? Because not only did they have integrity in the obvious way, don't lie, cheat, or steal, they had integrity of their word, right? If your dad said to the seed person, hey, you know, I'll be there at 2 o'clock in the morning and we'll make sure we do whatever we need to do, his word was his bond. I think that people misunderstand sometimes integrity. Yeah, it's the obvious integrity, but when you lose integrity of your word, you didn't follow up, you didn't make a phone call back, you said you were going to do something, but you didn't do it. You just lost your own personal integrity of your word, which is sacred. And I think your dad and my dad, and hopefully, you know, we like to believe you and I have that same thing, is that, you know, right. We may not always be the best at what we do. We may not always be the most successful, but boy, if I tell you I'm going to do something, you can count on me being there.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, that's the beauty behind that generation, right? Is I don't want to get on the generational thing. That's a can of worms to open up, but
if I don't blow this, I'll maybe invite me back and we can talk about it. But I'm a little nervous from your last response, so I'm kind of hesitant. I'm not buying nothing on time right now.
Oh man, that's funny. But you look at that generation even compared to my generation of, you know, I just go back to my military career, even, you know, I mean, I served, I was over in combat and all those things. And you go back to like World War I, World War II, and they came home and were just silent. I mean, they didn't say anything. And then you start looking at further generations and how we've opened this big gap up of all these problems and so on and so forth. And those generations were just, they had one thing in mind. All they wanted to do is come home and go to work.
Right.
They wanted to go, come home, get a good job, go to work, support their family, raise a family, and hopefully have kids that aren't shitheads. Right. So,
well, I gotta tell you, I read a great article. I'm watching on Apple TV, Masters of the Air. And it's by the same individuals who wrote Band of Brothers. And so Tom Hanks obviously plays a role in all of the production and all those kinds of things. So he's having a conversation with the actors who are now playing the roles as, you know, the Army Air Corps and B-7 and the bombers. And he says to them, which to me was just an amazing thing, what he said, and it really kind of stops you for a moment, and it kind of reinforces what you were just saying. He says to the actors, look, you cannot play these individuals as heroes.
Right.
They were good people. They never viewed themselves as heroes. They were doing their job on behalf of their country that they love, and their goal was to get home, to get to the number of missions that they, you know, what that they got to, that, that when they got there, they could go home again. If you play them as heroes, you won't represent them in an honest, true way. And I thought about that, and I said, wow, that is powerful. And that's what made them so good. That's what makes the leaders that you want to follow, whether in combat or whether in business or whether on the PTA or on a soccer field, you follow them because they have honesty of purpose. What they do stems from an honest heart. They're just good people doing their jobs. And I thought to myself, wow, that is so powerful. And that's what's missing, I think, in many ways today.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you look at running the UPS store, right? That whole franchise model. That's a lot of people, man. And, you know, just to organize that whole thing, I mean, that is no small feat, man. and then manage that whole thing for, I don't know how many years you did that, but I assume quite a few. And to take that to the success levels it is today, I mean, you contributed to that. That's pretty damn cool.
Yeah, I think the best thing I ever did was not getting away, right? Because what you start to realize is it's never about you. It's always about you. It's always about the people in your care, the people who are running it. And the best ideas still always come from the front line. And I truly always believe that. I remember one time I got asked a question, what's the biggest thing that you worry about? Like, what keeps you up awake at night? And I said, that one day they're going to figure out that I'm the guy they promoted. And I'm like, wait a minute, that's the guy, that little short guy there? I thought he'd be taller. I thought he'd be better looking, but that's it. That's the guy. Like, don't be afraid of the man, you know, be the guy behind a curtain. I think you have to really understand that it all works, especially in size, large organizations. It all works because it works from the bottom up. Right. And power of a pyramid is the base, obviously. And so I think that, I mean, that sincerely, that's what's so important. Think about the missions that you were on and think about how complicated they were and how precise they were. You know, they always talk about, you know, on an aircraft carrier that, you know, it's so difficult, it's so loud, but everybody knows their role, they know their responsibility, and everybody, you know, understands what they're supposed to do and do it to the best of their abilities. When you get to that point in an organization, whether it's three people or 300,000 people, that's when it all works. But you're not the daily person making that happen. You're the cheerleader almost. You're that, as I said, chief enthusiasm officer. So I think that's really the strength of an organization, when you can understand it's never about you, it's always about the people.
Absolutely. Gosh, that's, you know, there again, another great, if you've taken nothing from this at this point, right? There's another great piece of advice. It's not about you, right? Not about you. And I see it all the time, you know, working with, you know, we work with, I mean, mostly just before mid-market companies, and the arrogance levels are really high. They're full of themselves, all these things. And, you know, I mean, I've always prided myself on just being a down-to-earth human being. I mean, at the end of the day, we're just humans. We're all the same. We're just skin wrapped over bones, right? So at the end of the day, and I never really did understand that, why people are that way. But then again, I wasn't raised that way. So
that's a great point.
You know, so I didn't, you know, even being successful in business, I just, that just never, ever crossed my mind. And, you know, I mean, I still have the first one I started. It's 26 years old and I still have that company. And I don't know, I'm a company collector, I guess. I have 18 of them, but you know, they're all small businesses too, you know. None of them have that hundreds of thousands of employees, but we've got about 3,000 spread across all of those. So, you know, but the point is I don't understand that mindset that a lot of the younger founders have, and they're not wanting to reach out for help. They're just wanting to take the arrows in the back. And I don't know, you've been in business yourself a long time. Do you see that kind of that same thing in today's market, I guess, of businesses?
Well, I think what ends up happening is there's this expectation, you know, and by the way, everything is so public now, right? So, you know, everybody wants to be the next, you know, Tesla or the next Amazon or
sure.
And those are all great. I mean, let's face it. I'm sure, you know, when, you know, 100 years ago, everybody wanted to be Rockefeller or Vanderbilt or whoever, right? But it wasn't as pronounced, or it wasn't, you know, social media wasn't able to raise them up so high. So they become almost rock stars as business people. I think what ends up happening is you lose sight of a good perspective. I mean, I think what people need to do is take a step back. And when I get asked this question, or, you know, if I get an opportunity to, you know, talk to groups, whether it's, you know, junior seniors in college or new small business owners, or work with them, you know, to me, it really comes down to three things that you have to answer yourself in the kind of confines of your own heart and mind. And that is, hey, who am I as a person, right? What do I stand for as an individual? And then what are the things I won't compromise? And companies really need to do the same thing. Who am I as a company? What do we stand for? And I think people and companies can answer one and two pretty well. Three is what gets them in trouble. What is it? What are the things I won't compromise? Whether it's your values, your integrity, whether it's a safety, because I'm so close to getting to the, you know, to getting this completed, and maybe all the safety protocols aren't right, but you know what, maybe we're just going to look the other way and get this completed and make it on time. Or, hey, we missed our business plan, let's just round up. And I think those are all the things that people, I think today, they're always on that line, because they really, number three, they haven't answered completely. And so everybody gets themselves in trouble. I mean, think about the way these people get themselves in trouble today, today's business. I mean, it's not simple, oh, I made a mistake. I mean, it's like, hey, I'm going to go down in a flame of glory, right?
Right.
And that's because they really don't understand how this whole set of questions of who I am, what I stand for, and what I won't compromise. And I think what ends up happening is they go into business with this desire to be that next, pick a company, Amazon, pick a billionaire. And what ends up happening on that road, you're going to get asked that question, you know, what won't I compromise about who I am and what I stand for? And then they start to take those chances. Some of them make them, but a lot of them don't. And if they look back and they're like, well, how did I get here? It's really because they weren't really kind of solid in answering question number three, what I won't compromise. Because you think about small businesses you worked at that failed. They could have went either way, but then right. They went off the edge with question number three.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's a great piece of advice right there is those three things for sure. And, you know, I'm curious though, I mean, there's been so many lessons in this whole thing, but I want to make sure we hit our rock heads with you know, two or three mainstay pieces of advice that you would give. I mean, you just gave three great ones, so I'm asking you for three more. So, I'm going to get everything I can out of you.
You got it.
So three things that you would tell a new founder coming into business today. What would you tell them if you had to give them three good pieces of advice to right. miss some arrows?
The first one is, I think you got to ask the question of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
What's the word I want someone to use to describe me at the end of this journey? And I think that's such an important thing, right? You start to think about at the end of this journey, what is it, whether it's as a management person, as a business owner, what's that word I want people to use to describe me at the end of my journey? Mm-hmm. For me, it was the word thoughtful. I wanted to be a thoughtful leader. Other people could come up whenever I, you know, have a workshop or I'll ask people that question. And it's amazing the different words they'll use. Some will use energetic, aggressive, decisive. One kid says rich, you know. So, but if you think about it, once you pick that word, you spend your whole career building your business or building your reputation as a mosaic to that word. Everything you do, for me, for example, is thoughtful. If it's integrity. I'm going to make sure I do it in integrity. So that's the first thing, because then you start to become true to yourself. And what are you doing then? You're establishing your brand. If you think about it, we all have a brand the way a company's product has a brand. You know, you think of a certain product and you can talk about and understand that product. Well, what's your brand? Well, in this case, it's that word that you build a mosaic to. So I would say, first thing is be true to yourself. Understand who you are by picking that word you want someone to use to describe you at the end of your career. Mm-hmm. Something similar like, you know, hey, I'm going to work for Jason. And I call up, you know, a couple of people that have worked for him and say, hey, what's he like? What's mm-hmm. it? And what they start to do is describe that word almost, or that brand. Well, you better come to work on time. You better have integrity. You better treat people with dignity and respect. Because those three things are, you're out if you can't handle those three, right? So that becomes your brand. So that becomes the first thing. You know, you start to get that brand. I think the second thing is it's all about your legacy. And for me, legacy is this whole concept of, did you leave things a little better than you found them? Are people right. better because of their time with you? Are customers better because of their engagement with you? Are share owners or stakeholders, are they in a better place because you are steward of the business? And so that's what legacy is all about for me. It's like this whole concept of, did I leave things a little better than I found them? I'm not going to be perfect. I'm going to make my share of mistakes. Things aren't always going to go the way I want them to go. But at the end of the day, did I leave things a little better than I found them? And if you do that, if you can leave things a little better than you found them, you've established your legacy. And so I think that's so important. So what's that word that defines you? Is your brand? What's the legacy that you have of leaving things a little bit better? And then the last thing is, hey, there's no substitute for hard work. The two most important things you bring to the table every day is energy and enthusiasm. You know, and without hard work and enthusiasm, it's the energy you bring. And without enthusiasm, hard work is just that, hard work. It gets old. So you bring hard work and enthusiasm to the energy you bring every day. And people watch everything you do, and everything you do speaks. So I think that those would be my three things, you know, what, you know, get, understand your brand identity, your brand promise by kind of understanding this word that, that describes you. I think, you know, this, what's your legacy? What are the, you know, what are the things that you leave better? Are people better? Are your customers better? Are your share owners, stakeholders better? And then finally, you know, do you understand the value of hard work and enthusiasm and that energy that you bring to help people get that, to be enthusiastic about the things you're working on?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I remember my wife said, she told me one time, she said, you know what? Nobody can ever accuse you of not working hard.
I tell you, that's a great compliment.
And she followed that with, just remember, when passion and purpose collide, you'll always be your most powerful self.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic.
I mean, that's some deep shit, man. It took me a minute to just, you know, kind of realize as that hit me what that actually meant. Right.
Oh, no, you're absolutely right. But that's a thoughtfulness, right? That's that person who's so thoughtful. I mean, think about it. I got to give you a bit of time at some point. My wife gave me my greatest lesson in my adult life as a leader.
Yeah. Oh, tell it. I want to hear it.
You got obviously rock and roll, but now you got Italian Catholic here. So you go to church, got to have handshake of peace.
Sure.
Or Debbie's got everybody. Me, I'm like, Deb, we don't really know everybody. We're in our pew. But she meets everybody. So we go out to dinner with this couple we met, and we got four kids. So the lady says to Debbie, hey, so who's your favorite kid? Who's your favorite child? And so I'm thinking, I want to hear how she answers that. You know, is it like Jean Marie, Nicole, Rocky, Andrew? No, you know, but she goes, well, I don't have favorites. So the woman's like, come on, everybody has a favorite. She goes, no, I don't. So the woman says, how could it be you don't have any favorites? And so then she answers the question in like the way you were at the end of your wife's. She says, I don't have favorites because each one of them gets what they need when they need it. Therefore, they're all my favorite. I'm like, holy cow.
What a great answer.
So thoughtful, so deep. Right? I'm like, damn. Now I'm sitting there looking like, why can't I think of good stuff like that? Right? Yeah. And so if you think about it, so from that point forward, I managed that from that point forward. If I had a CFO who was good at their job, was confident, they didn't need me to overmanage them. They needed me to just let them run. Whatever you need, come see me. But you got it. You got the authority that goes with the responsibility. Well, he or she felt like the favorite because I left them alone. If I had a director of sales that needed me to help them close a job or close a win, and I'm with them, they felt like the favorite. And I kept thinking about that. That is brilliant. That is so thoughtful. So in the organization, everybody gets what they need when they need it, and then they feel like the favorites. And I said to her, hon, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And the only thing she said is, how come you never listened to me? I go, what is that supposed to mean? Why were you telling everybody? They're telling me, oh, that's a great story. It's in my book. I even have it in my book. People have written back. I look, they wrote back that they really love your thing. Yeah, but how come it took you so long to listen? I got to tell you, I'm the rockhead. But that to me was so powerful. And I managed that way the rest of my career.
Yeah.
Staffs and with my people.
Man, that's got to be the title of this episode.
Oh, everybody gets what they need when they need
it. That's right. Yeah,
I tell you what, you'd definitely be helping me.
Oh, that's hilarious, man. Well, hey, I mean, there again, lots of great business advice there to learn from, no doubt about that. Where can people connect with you that want to work with you in your new company?
Well, probably the simplest is the title of the book, Tighten the Lug Nuts. I have a website.
That's awesome.
Yeah, tightenthelugnuts.com. There's a great story in the book, which is actually a true story that happened that the book is named after. But obviously, when lug nuts are loose, they're important. When you don't tighten them and the wheel comes off, it becomes urgent. So you can only handle so many. So tighten your lug nuts. But tightenthelugnuts.com. I also have a 3 to 5 minute podcast that drops every Tuesday, Thursday. It's simply on management thoughts. It's simply on, you know, leadership development, succession planning, you know, the value of patience and decision making, those kinds of things. So it's just simple 3 to 5 minutes, short, quick idea. So that they're all there on tightenthelugnuts.com. And then from there, you can get to my other site. It talks about predominantly now I'm doing leadership training, keynote speaking, and we do some consulting with small businesses. But prominently right now we're doing, or predominantly, I should say, I'm sorry, we're doing the keynote speaking and the leadership training right now.
Yeah, very cool, man. I love that title. That is so awesome.
You'll love the story too. You know, when we're done, send me your address.
Yeah. That'd be awesome.
You'll love the stories. You'll laugh. Yeah. There's a story in every chapter, as you can tell by our conversation, right?
Yeah. I'm a book guy. I love books. I love to write. I think I'm on my 18th now.
Oh, you got to tell me your lead. All right. I got to go get your most recent one. Yeah. Well, you know what? Tell me your favorite one. I'll start there.
Be good, be brief, be gone.
Be good.
Be brief, be gone.
Be gone. Okay.
All the generals used to say that when we come in and brief them.
Right.
They would say, look, just be good, be brief, and be gone. That's it.
Wow. Right.
So I kind of, some of that instilled in me. And then I created our process that we started, that I took some of my first companies through. Right. And then I thought, you know what? It's such a simple six things, right?
Right.
That we take people through. So it's like business really is that. Be good, be brief, and be gone. Right?
Yeah. No, it's like the person that comes in, you ask them what time it is, they're building you to watch. It's like, come on, just tell me what time it is. But that's good. I got to work on the second one though, I think.
Yeah.
The be brief one, yeah. All right. I got homework here too, man.
Oh man, that's too funny. Well, hey, I like to end the show with this kind of thought-provoking question, and that is, if you could have invited anybody here today with us, dead or alive, any point in time in history, who would have you loved to have here with us, and why them?
Well, that's a great question. I would invite my dad, only because my dad unfortunately passed away way too young. I don't think he really clearly understood the things that I was doing. But he was so proud of me. He worked in a tool and die shop for 40 something years when he came over. And I think a conversation like you and I are having right now would be just, I think he would, he was always so proud of me. If I was the garbage man, I'd be the best garbage man in the world. Wouldn't matter. If I was a grave digger, he'd be telling people, nobody digs a grave better than my son. But I think this would have been talking to you and how genuine you are. And I think it would have made him proud. I think he might have understood, more of the things that took place and some of the things like that. So I think that would, you know, he died very young. And so I think that would have been nice for him.
Yeah. That's an awesome answer, man. I don't think you could have answered any better, to be quite honest. My respectful roots, they root to my father. I mean, are there a lot of people that have seen wild success that we could go, oh, Elon Musk or whoever? That's so damn shallow in my opinion, but it's the people that actually have an effect in our life because that's what I would say. If I could have somebody here with us today, it'd be my dad, right? If I could have my dad here every day, I'd have him here, right? Because once they're gone, they're gone. And
think about it. If I had my dad and your dad, they were sitting there, they would both be like, they would have that smile like, hey, these two did good for themselves, huh? Who would have thought when they were little?
We thought they were going to be a couple of schmucks.
Right. You know, well, they're the ones that were like, who are they listening to? It ain't us. You know what? My dad, one time, looks at me and says, you know, just remember, It's what you do when no one's watching that counts. I'm like, Dad, you just ruined it. Nobody was watching. That's the best part of this. Yeah, right. Just remember, two people are always watching. The man he's doing with his finger. The man upstairs and the guy looking in the mirror. So just remember that when you look in the mirror. And I'm like, okay, thanks, Dad. So the two of them would be sitting there looking at me and you having this conversation. I'm like, hey, maybe they listened, those two.
Well, maybe they did do all right. Yeah, maybe they did. That's too funny. Well, hey, you know, man, thanks for stopping by. You know, I always say we all have the same 168 hours a week. You know, thanks for stopping by for 40 minutes here. And just, man, this has just been a blast. I've had a lot of fun. It's one of the best conversations I've had on the show for a while. So, thanks for making it easy for me.
Well, hey, thank you for the invite. It's an honor. And by the way, congratulations on your 2-year anniversary.
Yeah. Today is the 2-year anniversary. We're just going to keep on going. We're just almost going to cross 800 episodes in 2 years.
Wow. That's amazing.
So it's crazy. All by accident too.
What happens the best, right?
The accident to have, I guess. But
that's right.
Anyway, all right. Thanks, brother. And again, I appreciate you being here. And cheers.
Thanks for the invite. Take care. Be safe.
Thanks for listening to War Room Moments with your host, Jason Miller. Please leave your feedback and visit strategicadvisorboard.com to get the latest and greatest business advisement on the planet. Follow us on social media for updates, and we'll see you on the next episode.